The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Fandom Files. We're a Sci-Fi Wire podcast about people who really, really love stuff. I'm Jordan Zachron. I'm the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire. I'm joined by my good pal and co-host, Emily Gaudette, who's an editor at The Plunge. Emily, welcome to 2020.
Thank you. Feels good.
Yeah. How was your
new
year? 2020's not going well.
Yeah, no.
But I'm glad we're here.
Yeah. Feels good in my body at the moment, but like on any other scale, it's going
sure. Well, did you have a good holiday?
I did. I had a really good holiday.
Did you get any good presents?
Yes, I did, actually. Cam and I just sort of like severed ties with family and did our own Christmas.
I was really worried you're going to just like tell me that you broke up with him.
What?
We severed ties. Well, you said we severed ties. I was like, wait a second.
Moment.
I'm like, you're holding
it really
well together.
No, we did the healthier thing. It was like, what an experiment. Do you want to go to a remote cabin where there's nothing else?
No.
And like play cards? And we had a really, really good time, and it felt like I was like proving something to myself. Like that's intimacy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's nothing to do.
Man.
Yeah. It was great.
Not because of my part. I would rather do it with Julia than anyone, but the idea of a cabin doing nothing is like my nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, that's in my soul. Like I like it too. And,
right.
And he likes it. But yeah, it was great. It was a good holiday. The best present I got was he got me a collection of antique glass perfume nebulizers.
What? What is that?
It's like what fancy ladies in the early 1900s used to put their perfume in.
All right, like jars?
Yeah. No, like it's like a it almost looks like a tiny delicate bong. And he got me three of them because I like old glass.
Got it. Well, yeah. That sounds wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
He clearly knows you.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
How about you? How was your holiday?
It was good. It was fine.
Good.
Yeah, normal. It was mm-hmm. good. We stayed around. We came here to 30 Rock on Christmas Eve and saw the tree from above in the cafeteria.
Nice.
Down on the plebes and the common people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was good. I'm not used to having Christmas trees, so I'm still getting used to it. Nice. Good overall holiday season. We are back for our first show in 2020. It's been, like you said, it's been a year so far. It's been a year in the last 10 days.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens this time of year, right? It's like a rip in the time-space continuum.
Speaking of geeky stuff,
mm-hmm.
what is the geekiest thing you've done?
Well, my sister is coming into town tonight, and I have been doing some work in advance of her playing Dungeons & Dragons with me and my group. Because, so Pauline, like, knows me better than anybody, but she hasn't seen my careful little life that I've constructed for myself here. So I think it's going to be weird for her to meet people who are on my wavelength.
Right. She'll feel a little bit challenged.
I think she'll be like, oh, there's more Emilys in the world. You know, like there's other people who want to sit in a basement and do voices.
Also, as we are prepping here at Sci-Fi Wire for like a whole bunch of Sonic and Sega content, because I love Sega Genesis, and like, why not celebrate the upcoming Sonic movie? It's been through so much. Might as well celebrate it. I downloaded Sonic Forces for Switch, and apparently that is not known to be a good game. I told someone here and they're like, ha, 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 ha.
You fool.
Yeah. But I wanted to, I was obsessed with Sonic as a kid, but then I haven't played a lot of like the 3D games.
Huh.
So I wanted to get a taste of that. You know, and like I loved Zelda for, you know, Breath of the Wild for Switch, and I spent a lot of time doing that, but it didn't necessarily like suck me in because it was fun. It was more just like a challenge than like an ethereal thing. This game, I was like, oh my God, I remember why I love video games again.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so I've been playing a lot of Sonic Forces, and I'm not good at it because it's just so fast. I basically have to like relearn how to play a Sonic game.
You got to go fast.
Yeah, got to go fast. But I'm getting better, and I'm enjoying it a lot.
Cool.
So getting into Sonic Forces, apparently a bad game, but you know what? I like it, so...
And I'm a bad guy.
Bad game for a naughty man.
Ew. What a subtitle on Sonic Forces.
Maybe... Do you think that would have goosed sales?
Are you a naughty boy? Get yourself Sonic.
A naughty man, actually, even worse.
That's worse.
Yep.
Naughty man, there's no prerequisite. Nope. I don't know what that is.
All right, now, we've got a very good man here for an interview. What a transition.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
I guess so.
Yeah, sure. No, it's the new year. I'm still, you know,
we're a little rusty. Yeah.
Very excited for our guest today, the iconic actor, Warwick Davis. You were pretty pumped when I told you that we had him, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
If you like fantasy, you know who he is.
Oh, absolutely. He was in Star Wars. He was a Wicket. He's Willow, played Willow himself. He's in Harry Potter. He's in the movie Maleficent 2, which is now coming out on Blu-ray and DVD. He's here to talk about that and everything else from his career. Every single little thing.
It's going to be a 4-hour episode.
No, very excited to have Warwick Davis on the show.
Today, how are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk. Really excited.
Fabulous. Good to talk to you guys.
Yeah. So how was your holidays?
It was good. Very busy, but lots of friends and family over. But yeah, we had a great time. Thank you.
Very cool. You know, so I watched Maleficent 2 last night. I got to say, your name, the character's name, Lickspittle. You've had a lot of great names and characters. Where would you rank this
it's
one?
It's a good name, isn't it? I don't know where it came from, but it kind of suits him really well as well. You know, there's some characters you play, you think, I don't think he looks like the name, but I think Lickspittle, I mean, it's... he's definitely a Lickspittle.
When you first got the script, you saw that name. What'd you think?
Well, I mean, I think I heard the name or I read the name in the script before I knew what he was going to look like. But I think I almost got the impression of what he would look like just from his name. You know, it wasn't far away when I saw the design. I was like, yeah, that's definitely Lickspittle. which is fantastic. I think it's really cool. Yeah.
It's a creepy little character with there's a lot of makeup, I imagine, a lot of costume in there. He's you know, one of the creepy, you know, you played a lot of funny characters, but the one eye thing, I guess he's got a monocle or fully costumed like a bag,
yeah,
I guess.
His goggles and everything. When you see him without all of his hazmat suit on and all of that stuff, you know, without his protection on, he's actually quite a cute character. But yeah, with all of that gear on, you know, and I like the way that the film slowly kind of, you initially, you know, when you just hear him and see a little bit of him through the letterbox at the beginning of the movie, you know, you're like, you don't know where you are with this guy. And then slowly through the movie, you kind of learn a little bit more about him and get to know him and realize that, you know, he's not as bad as he's made out to be. What he's doing is totally bad, but at his heart, he's not evil. He's doing these things because he's been put in this position. You know, it's a matter of survival for him, and I think that's a really interesting kind of journey for the character.
You know, I was going to say when I started watching this, I was like, wow, I haven't seen Warwick Davis be a bad guy, really. You're always, you know, a hero, someone we love. So that must have been, even though, you know, he's not totally bad, it must have been fun to play a little bit of a creep.
And they're always the most fun roles as an actor. You know, you do often crave those roles that see you, you know, like Grip Hook was another role just like that, where, you know, you kind of, the audience don't quite know where they are with the character. And yeah, to play a baddie is great because it's very unlike you as a person. I mean, most actors are nice people, and to kind of be able to be the kind of villainous, evil, mischievous, all of those kind of things are fun to do. They're really fun.
I got to say, probably my favorite evil Warwick Davis character, not evil, but bad, is in Life's Too Short, the character you play as yourself.
that version of Warwick is, that was really so fun to do as well, because he's basically, he is me, but to get to be a Warwick that can say and do those things was very liberating. I don't go around on the streets like that normally, but that Warwick, again, you know, he's kind of much like Lickspittle, he's forced into that behavior by the world around him. Do you know what I mean? And his predicament at that point. So Lickspittle being imprisoned in a dungeon for the Queen, and, you know, for his own kind of sake and safety, and ultimately, hopefully, his escape from there is to do what he's doing and create a mechanism to kill fairies. And in Life's Too Short, it's a kind of, it's survival and the world against this poor man who isn't, his career is failing. And then he, in desperation, he becomes, you know, this kind of almost this monster that he becomes to kind of get himself out of this situation.
You know, the scene in Life's Too Short, it's at the beginning of the second episode where, you know, mother tries to get you to sign an autograph for her kid for free because he has a tumor. To see you fight with her about that for like a solid 5 minutes is one of the funniest things I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, that's often, if I appear at a science fiction convention, there'll always be one person that says that to me, or quote that to me when they're getting their autograph from me. But I mean, Ricky and Stephen are brilliant. Ricky Gervais, Stephen Merchant, were taking elements of my life that, you know, we talk for hours about, you know, my life and career and all of those things, and I'd tell them stories, and then they'd take those little sort of nuggets of stories and then spin them up into these amazing scenes. So yeah, much of what you see in Life's Too Short is actually based on things that have happened to me.
What? It seems like you deeply invest yourself in the arcs of the characters you play. I'm wondering, when you're looking at roles and projects now, how do you decide if something is worth your time or exciting to you as an artist?
Well, I go with it. I mean, my initial instinct is, I've learned over years, it wasn't like that at the beginning, but I've learned that my initial impression of reading a script, I have to go with that. So if I read something and I'm getting drawn in, I'm excited by it, I'm intrigued by it, and then that's what I'll use that instinct to decide whether I'm doing the role. But if I'm a little bit like, I'm not so sure about this, if there's any doubt, then I shouldn't do it. But initially, early on in your career, you can't do that as an actor, because you have to try and make a living, and you have to also try and forge a career. So everything that comes to you, you tend to instinctively say yes to. But I'm fortunate now that there are more offers, and there is also, I'm a little bit more kind of comfortable in my own skin as an actor, and I don't feel that I've got to prove anything. So therefore, you can say no to something if you feel that it's not something you're going to get a lot out of. So, but yeah, instinctively, I'll know if it's something. And my agent's also very good at kind of discussing it with me, and I trust his judgment, and at the same time, he trusts mine.
Now characters that you made famous are coming back to you. I mean, you were, even for a brief moment, Wicked again in Rise of Skywalker. What was it like to get back in that costume and join the production for a moment?
I mean, yeah, to bring back characters is great. And it happened a few times now, because we did it with Wicket most recently in Rise of Skywalker, which, again, I never thought I would see the day. When I had the call about that, I almost was like, are you serious? And they were like, yeah, he really wants to do this. But we've got to work with you to actually make it happen, because they had very little reference of how this costume was. We had the photographs, and of course we got the movie to look at, but there was no reference of any of the kind of structure of the costumes, because of course these aren't just some fur and you just don't just put it on. It's not as simple as that. There's an undersuit of foam and things, well, there was on the original costume, that actually creates the shape of the character. And we had to try and figure that out. Unfortunately, I had a collection of my own photographs that my mum and dad had taken while we were filming Return of the Jedi, because of course back then we didn't have social media and all of this stuff and the internet where things could get leaked. So having a camera on the set was not regarded as being any sort of a security risk at all. So there were lots of photos of me half in the costume, you know, when I was trying to keep cool, we'd pull the fur back down and there'd be just the padded undersuit, so we could see how the structure was. And I shared these photographs with the team at on Rise of Skywalker, and I just worked with them to try and make an older looking Wicket, you know, obviously just to resemble the character that we know and love from the original film. But also he's got older like I have, and he's had a child. So the kind of the Ewok that you see next to him there is his son and my son in reality as well, which was a really lovely touch, because JJ was really keen for us to play the characters together, which is lovely.
That is so cool. I mean, we wouldn't have known that otherwise. And so,
yeah, no, that's Harrison in there. Yeah.
Did you imagine, like, in your mind, what would have happened to Wicket all these years later?
Well, yeah, what's happened? I think life's been okay for the Ewoks. You know, once they kind of expelled the Empire from, I don't think, it seems like everything's been okay. I mean, obviously, there was this great sigh. You know, the idea of that scene there was to be kind of looking up and seeing that, you know, the First Order's falling and you know, kind of life is going to be good again. But yeah, who knows what they've been through since then? I mean, it's a difficult one. I wasn't given any backstory, but no doubt, knowing the fans of Star Wars, there will be people creating these backstories, and who knows, there'll be one of those, there'll be a novel about it, or a kind of expanded universe, comic of some sort that will do that, will fill in the gaps. But, you know, I played, the Weasel was another character that I played in episode one, Phantom Menace, that then came back in Solo. And so that was one I particularly enjoyed, because he, when we were trying to decide, you know, okay, he's part of Emperor's Nest, but who is this guy? What's he going to look like? And then it was decided that he should be that character we saw in Phantom Menace. I thought, well, that's brilliant, because the timeline's exactly the same. I'm exactly the right number of years older than I was when I played the character the first time. It all worked really well. And he's another character you think, well, what was he up to? What happened to him since? You know, and I think he's trying to do a bit of good in the galaxy. You know, he was a gambler. Probably not doing very, very much with his life. And he decided to take on a cause. And I'd like to see more of that character. I think there's more to him. And again, whether it becomes an expanded universe kind of novel type thing, or whether it's more for him in another Star Wars production, be it TV or film, who knows? But I definitely there's more to him than we know at the moment.
One of the first projects, I think it might have been the first project I remember really loving that you were in, was Willow.
Oh, yeah.
I'm wondering, were you drawn to fantasy and sci-fi projects because you were a fan of those as a kid? Is that just a space you like playing in?
Well, it's one of those things that just happened. Fortunately for me, I'm a fan of that genre. I mean, I think cinema, it works at its very best when you walk into that darkened space and you are transported somewhere else. You know, I love action movies and James Bond and all of those things, but I like to go in a movie theater and be taken and not reminded of what's going on outside. I want to go somewhere else. And the magic of cinema is for me in these genres. So to get to go and play in that world as well. When you walk onto a set, in a Star Wars movie or Maleficent, the artistry and the kind of the way that you are then transported as an actor in that space is amazing. The illusion starts for you right there live. And then obviously it goes even further when you see it in the cinema later on. But yeah, I love the genre, but for me, I mean, it suits me as well, because more often than not in sci-fi and fantasy, there are characters who are of my stature. So I kind of fit into that very well. Over the years, I've become really experienced, you know, using prosthetic makeup. You know, you kind of become known within the industry for kind of doing that.
You know, in Willow, we both just rewatched it to recall it and get some questions ready. And then I read about, I forget how much you carried around the baby. And then I read that there were like a ton of babies that were used, kind of cycled through. And so you're in this, you know, this is the first big, huge starring role, and you're carrying a baby constantly. Different babies. What was that like?
There was a lot of babies. There were a lot of babies. I remember we would, in rehearsals for Willow, I would have to do, you know, sword fighting and horse riding and all these things that I thought as a 17-year-old were really under rehearsals and all that stuff. And then there were these baby sort of classes as well that I had to go to, where I had to learn how to hold a baby correctly, how to change a diaper, and all of these things that are completely not fun for a 17-year-old to do. But I had to look like I knew what I was doing in the story. Willow is a father of two kids, so he should look very comfortable holding a baby. On the movie itself, you know, the actual filming, there were numerous different youngsters used as Alora Dannon. There were twins actually who played Alora Dannon. So if one wasn't in the quite right frame of mind to be giving the reactions that were required, they would then bring the other twin in to see whether that one would indeed respond correctly. There was also a mechanical baby as well. We used to call it Moto Baby. That one could move its head from side to side. It was very heavy. It was actually heavier than the real baby. But indeed, if I fell over or dropped it, it wouldn't mind, because it was, you know, battery operated and it didn't matter. And then there was also a kind of a mannequin, which was a bit softer. So if I fell over with that one, I wouldn't hurt myself or injure any kind of mechanics. It's interesting. I ran into one of the twins in New Zealand when I was filming the Chronicles of Narnia movie down there. I was staying in Queenstown, which is close to Avon Shop, and yeah, one of the twins worked in there was a flight simulation sort of center there, and I was off work one day, and I went to it, and she said I was a Laura Dunham.
Oh my
God!
Just
like, what? Whoa, okay, how cool, you know? Yeah, she was one of the babies. So it was a lot of work had to be done to you know, convince the audience that I, you know, indeed knew what I was doing with a baby. And it wasn't the most fun for me. I enjoyed the action stuff.
That is so funny.
The sword fighting and the stunts.
That is incredible. And so it must have been difficult. I would have been terrified. When a friend gives me a baby to hold, this has only happened a few times, I'm terrified to drop it. And you're like riding horses.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't particularly like the horse riding side of things because I'd had a bad experience on the horse when I was younger. My sister had horses, and one day she persuaded me to get on it, and it decided to just run off. And I couldn't stop it. So I wasn't very comfortable around horses, but then had to learn to horse ride. It was weird. Since Willow, I ended up going through this run of projects where they all revolved around horses. And I was like, why is this happening? Why can't it be cars? I love driving fast cars. Why can I not have a movie about cars? Why is it always horses? So it was carriage driving. I had to learn to carriage drive. And then I ended up getting on about three or four projects where I drove carriages or worked with horses really closely, where I had to walk underneath horses and all. I mean, I became a little too familiar with horses, to be honest. But since then, the last few years, I haven't had to do anything with horses again, which has been quite nice. But on Willow, I was kind of suppressing my fear most of the time. And also, just quickly, Val Kilmer used to wind me up because he loved his horse to be particularly frisky and full of energy. Well, I like mine to be really placid and sleepy and dopey. But he used to kind of actually sort of rile his horse up a bit before the take. So it was, you know, it would be trotting around and look weird. And he used to try, and mine would then start getting a little of that energy as well. And I'd be like, Val, stop doing that. And he used to really have fun in seeing me get stressed out, basically.
That's so good. Now they're doing the Willow sequel. Are they going to put you back on a horse? You didn't have the power to be like, no horses.
Yeah, I mean, any projects I get involved with now, I'll kind of look straight away through the script to see if there's any horses. I mean, Maleficent, there were horses, but I didn't have to get on any of them or wasn't particularly near any of them. So, yeah, I was more than happy. I'm more happy to look at them. Beautiful animals, but I think, me with my feet on the ground is where I prefer to remain.
So you're like Indiana Jones with the snakes. That's your thing.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I'd be like, horses. Why did it have to be horses? That's normally what I say in an audition.
That's really funny. And I mean, like I mentioned, the Willow, the TV show is happening now. That's really cool. What are they, did you discuss with them before they announced it? Like, how much have you been involved? Obviously, you're going to be in it, but...
It's a kind of a weird bit of news. And the internet's done its thing in kind of perpetuating that and kind of generating the excitement around it, which is good. There is development going on, but there's no kind of green lit, here we go, guys, this is happening. So it's kind of, I think there is, what's lovely about Willow is that there's so much love for the film, so much excitement about the possibility of there being more Willow, and it has been for years and years and years. So now when there's a little bit of work being done to actually develop this and make this something that will be a reality, that kind of the internet's got ahead of itself a little bit, and the excitement of the fans has got ahead of us where we are. So at this point, nothing's official, nothing's greenlit, nothing's a go, but we all have fingers firmly crossed and are doing our best to make this happen for the fans, because they've been there the whole time since 1988 when it came out, and generations now, you know, people who were kids when it was out as a movie are now grandparents and have grandchildren who they show the movie to. So that's really a lovely place to be.
Do you have a dream role or a dream project or maybe a director you'd want to work with?
I've never worked with Steven Spielberg. I've met him and chatted to him. And obviously I grew up with his movies and the movies he'd not only directed but executive produced. And just, I don't know, I would really like to work with Steven. I'd love to work with Ron Howard again. Having worked with him on Willow, obviously, and then him coming onto Solo was so lovely. We absolutely adored the kind of reuniting again, and it felt like no time had passed. Hearing Ron say "and action" in the very distinctive way he does, I was like, "Wow, I'm back on Willow again." It's just so weird. And as far as roles go, I mean, I'd love to play a kind of a spy type character, like a James Bond-esque character. Or indeed a villain in a kind of James Bond-esque type film. Ooh. That would be fun to do. Either of those I'd like. But something, I mean, I enjoy projects where I get to dress up very smartly, more smartly than normal. So yeah, something in a tuxedo would be very nice.
Cool.
Rather than, you know, a hazmat suit. So something smart and, you know, fast cars, that kind of thing would be cool.
No horses, though. All right, Warwick, thank you so much for taking the time. This was a whole lot of fun.
Been a pleasure. Thanks for you taking the time as well, and good luck to you both. Thanks
all right.
A lot.
Thank you.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was great.
I love that he hates horses.
Yeah,
or fears them, whatever it is.
I mean, strong our feelings. Longtime listeners know that we are both horses, you
yes,
and I.
Yeah.
So that was a little tense.
We are. BoJack is a documentary. Honestly, that would make this show make a whole lot more sense if we were horses.
Everyone's like, oh.
I get it now. It's like 115 episodes in and I finally understand.
Yeah, Jordan doesn't have any blinders on. That's why he is the way he is.
Yep. Things just hit me out of nowhere.
Yep.
Well, Emily, how can people get in touch with you and speak English and not nay? That was bad. That was bad.
Hey, you can nay at me. I'm Emily G. Monster on Twitter.
And I'm at Jordan Zachron on Twitter. We're also at Phantom Files Sci-Fi on Twitter. We'll be back next week with another very fun guest. I'm not going to spoil who it is.
And we will reveal their greatest fear.